I'm John Phillips. Welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure. Today, we're looking at findings from our latest research into global infrastructure. Each year, with the help of our friends at EY, we survey our investor members to see what type of assets they are investing in and in what locations around the world. And that helps us to paint a picture of the movements in the market by country and sector. This year, we surveyed 69 investors and found that they have stakes in 2,400 individual assets around the world, and that was across 70 countries. We also found that investors had upped their investments significantly over the past 12 months, with members now collectively holding more than $1.6 trillion in infrastructure assets. I'm delighted to be joined for this episode by EY's Mike Parker, who heads up EY's infrastructure business in the Americas, and Udit Gandhi, who leads EY's European infrastructure business. Thanks so much to both of you for joining us.
Hi, John. Great to be here, and thanks for the invite to join you and your listeners.
Great to be here. Thanks, John.
So, Udit, let's get into the conversation. Can you start us off with an overview of some of the key takeaways from this asset database research that you've been helping us with?
Absolutely. In many ways, there were no surprises. I think those of us that have been in the sector for the last several years will recognize these themes as I talk about them. So renewables and energy transition investments saw a big step up with a 10% increase in solar and 22% increase in wind generation capacity owned by GIIA members. We started tracking EV charging investments for the first time this year, and I'm sure that the 14,000 plus charge points that are in the portfolio today will grow sharply in future. Digital infrastructure continued to attract investment with a big step up in the number of towers under member ownership. Data centers were a key asset type as well, with continued growth in that area in 2023 as well. So I'm sure we'll be talking about those next year. This offset a little bit of the slowdown in at least new investments in fiber in some parts of Europe. Transportation infrastructure remained an important asset class, particularly road and rail assets. And then when we look regionally, we see that there was a significant uptake in members' EU and Oceania-based portfolios, and then some growth in the US as well, though by all accounts, that appears to be set to accelerate.
Thanks, Udit. Turning to you, Mike, you know, we're almost a year on now from the Inflation Reduction Act getting through Congress. Can you remind us of what's contained within that legislation and how is it shaping the strategies for investors going forward?
Sure. So look, we're really coming back off of three very major pieces of federal legislation. The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which I think we can dive into, Inflation Reduction Act or IRA that you just asked about, and then also the CHIPS Act. Focused on semiconductor manufacturing, all of which are impacting the infrastructure investment opportunity and landscape. So from the IRA or Inflation Reduction Act, there's about $370 billion of that was aimed at addressing energy security and climate change, primarily through credits and incentives. They touch on a whole host of areas that go across that things that are at the consumer level for purchase of heat pumps, water heaters, biomass stoves, and electric vehicles, but that also affect the upstream supply chain, as well as subsidies around carbon capture, if you speak to nuclear facilities, and very significantly for hydrogen. And so we can get into a number of these different areas, but across the board, the key takeaway with the IRA is that overwhelmingly, its provisions are tax credit related, or in some cases, a cash equivalent thereof. And so they're also, it's not a finite number of grants in most cases. It's an ability to put forward projects that qualify and then to seek those credits and receive them and go forward. And so in some sense, we actually don't know the true dollar cost or value of the IRA incentives, because it will depend on how much uptake there is in the market. And there's been some differing forecasts around that.
So that's the Inflation Reduction Act of the three bits of legislation you mentioned, Mike. So talk to us a bit about the IIJA and how is that working, and then follow on with the CHIPS Act as well.
Great. So with the IIJA, that is primarily grant focused, in some cases block grants, often to state and local governments, but also competitive grants as well as loans. And it both reauthorized our existing surface transportation spending in the U.S., but also added $550 billion of new federal funding incrementally. And so very importantly, even though we're a year in, that first year, only around $20 billion or so of the incremental new was spent. And even of that baseline amount, there were lots of changes that allowed for new types of uses, and from everything from intelligent transportation to grid hardening and broadband are contained within that. And so I think the other piece of intuition for the market is that those subsidies are not meant to crowd out private spending. They're meant to attract spending. So in the case of broadband, what we're seeing is that the subsidy from the federal government is making projects feasible that were not otherwise so. And they're encouraging very significant investment by even large corporates, often in partnership with infrastructure investors, to actually ensure that they're taking advantage of the subsidy that is there and moving quickly enough. The same token, we're seeing state and local governments also be incentivized to match. And so typically transportation funding is about 2x at the state level what the federal government is putting in. So a lot of projects are moving forward. We are seeing some struggles with inflation. And so in some cases, there's a lot of new money, but the cost of construction has also gone up equally. And I think that's going to open the door for more creative partnering with the private sector as well.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Mike. So, Udit, what are policymakers in Europe making of this, and how are they responding to the exciting developments in the US? What are the implications at the country level in Europe?
So, John, as you know, Europe is a patchwork of different regulations, which the EU has tried to pull together in strategic frameworks that hopefully achieve the objectives of the European Union collectively, alongside, of course, the UK and some of the other bigger countries that influence infrastructure investing in this part of the world. The newest tool in the toolbox is the Green Deal Industrial Plan, which is the overarching framework to help make Europe the world's first climate neutral continent by 2050. And it's aimed at decarbonizing industry in Europe. And, you know, there's a focus there on the circular economy, on innovation, on easier access to funding for projects, which is all very interesting and I think supportive of what our members are trying to do. You've also got the Global Gateway Strategy, which contemplates spending 300 billion euros during the 2021 to 2027 period around the world on sustainable infrastructure projects. And alongside that, you have a myriad of other tools and structures that are available to help. So the European Fund for Strategic Investment, there's the European Structural and Investment Funds, and a whole lot of others. So, you know, we could spend hours talking about these, but I think the main point here is that there is a series of support mechanisms that's available to infrastructure investors, but they do all come with different conditions and different requirements in different parts of Europe. And so, quite rightly, our investor clients spend a lot of time trying to get familiar with what incentives and subsidies are available and how their investments, particularly in newer technologies around the energy transition, might be supported by the European Union and governments in this area.
So one of the features of the database this year is some new categories emerging. Can you give us a feel for, you know, which sectors are up and which sectors are down on the previous year?
Yes, absolutely, John. So, you know, it's going to be no surprise to our listeners when I say that there are a few trends that we're observing in the database as we, you know, do this work with the GIIA every year. We're seeing a convergence in all of the major subsectors within infrastructure around this whole concept of sustainable energy and using sustainable energy to fulfill our data requirements. You know, the cloud is very energy intensive. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk amongst infrastructure investors about how we can ensure that investments in the cloud, investments in digital infrastructure are powered sustainably. And then there's, of course, the convergence of electricity and the electrification of everything into, for example, transportation. And so, you know, the whole world of EV charging, battery storage, carbon capture, etc. And so, you know, as we see more technological development, which is very exciting, but also scary from an investment perspective, because, you know, our investor clients are not in the business of taking technology risk by and large, it becomes even more important to have regulatory and government support for business models that are emerging on the back of the mega trends around digitalization and the energy transition. So, you know, specifically when we look at the database and we see what's changed, it'll be no surprise to you to hear that, you know, what's up is investments in EV charging, in biogas, in EFW, and in electricity grids, and also in the digital world, in data centers and towers, and in the transportation world, in road and rail assets in particular. What's down is anything to do with a negative ESG profile. So, you know, more traditional oil and gas related investments have a difficult time attracting investment. And the other thing that we've started to see in, you know, late 2022 and into 2023 is that investors are becoming concerned about new investments in certain parts of Europe in the fiber world, because we've now had a trend of some quite heavy investment in that space over the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, given the change in interest rates and given the change in the cost base associated with developing fiber networks and deploying fiber networks, we're seeing investor clients take a careful look at that sector and be very careful about the kinds of about committing additional capital into fiber.
So much is said about net zero these days, Udit, where in terms of from an investor point of view, when they're looking at their portfolios, how do they think about net zero? Is it an opportunity or is it a challenge for them to overcome?
It's very interesting you bring that up, John, because I would say if I think about the majority of the conversations I've had with clients over the last year, they've been about this challenge of how infrastructure investors can square the circle of not taking unreasonable technology risk while delivering the risk and returns for their investor clients and still supporting a sustainable transition to net zero. And you know, that is one of the biggest challenges I think we're all facing as a sector. We spend a lot of time helping clients think through what opportunities they have to help decarbonize parts of industry, for example, that haven't traditionally been thought of as infrastructure, whether there are things that could be done, as I mentioned earlier, in, you know, powering data centers, whether there are things that could be done in healthcare or in industrial applications through the use of things like hydrogen, for example, that might help to enable the energy transition and the transition to net zero. But this is a real challenge for not just the sector, but the world. And I look forward to working with clients as we continue to help them through it.
Oh, that's great. So, Mike, if we sit down this time next year to discuss what the database looks like in another 12 months' time, get your crystal ball out for me. What do you think we'll be talking about? What will have changed in that time period?
I want to be measured in my comments, of course, but also a little bit bold. Personally, I think for several reasons that I'll mention, over the next 12 to 24 months, we have the potential for some very, you know, if we think about funds in terms of vintages, for these to be potentially very successful vintages. We're coming out of a period of rising interest rates and interest rates being driven by central banks, as well as by geopolitical events on the commodity side. Certainly, we've had a lot of impacts to inflation. And so, in that context, I think we did see some pauses in the market also, not because infrastructure isn't necessarily a good natural hedge against inflation. I believe it is, and I think that will continue to prove out. But because at a time when rates are rapidly changing, investors in this space are not immune to the risks that occur across the private equity and investment sector. And so as we reach potentially sort of a peak in terms of rates, or at least a slower progression, I think the market is going to be much more able to move forward. And I think there is now, when interest rates were close to zero, there was a little bit less extra upside from that. But if we look back to 2008, 2009, post-financial crisis, we could be in that kind of a time now. In terms of deal types, I think as Udit said, we're also starting to see such a focus across our corporate clients on decarbonization, and such an opportunity for infrastructure funds to partner with them. Corporates also are responding to the very types of incentives that we were talking about with respect to the Inflation Reduction Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And if there's a one-time opportunity to make positive investments or NPV positive investments because of federal subsidies, at the same time, corporates don't necessarily want to cut dividends to do so. And there's a very strong synergy with the amount of capital that's been raised for infrastructure investment to help fund that. And so I think one prediction is we're going to see more corporate deals. We're going to see some where corporates want to decarbonize faster. They want a partner to do that, or they want to actually take assets that are off their balance sheet entirely and operate in more asset-light space, or be able to procure renewable power, for example, directly from the grid most of the time. They're going to find infrastructure investors to be great partners for that. And I think one of my colleagues referred to that as sort of starting to look at the things that are not core, but sort of like your chore is my core, is a way a lot of corporates can look at infrastructure investors. But there also are ones where there's opportunities to make one-time investments, whether it's in power generation facilities or EV networks or fiber and so forth. And I think we're going to see some additional deals where infrastructure investors are 49% partners, but are there to help provide the capital along with those federal subsidies. And the same thing, obviously, with the CHIPS Act as we look towards manufacturing, or as the longer term supply chain for electric vehicles and for a number of these other types of facilities. Lastly, just to mention, I think in the U.S. in particular, the interest in hydrogen is very, very significant. Not only have the tax credits in IRA made the U.S. one of the most attractive markets from a pricing standpoint for hydrogen, but also we will have in the fall the first indications from the federal government of funding for regional hydrogen hubs under the IIJA. And I think those two things are going to continue to very significantly focus the market there. We also are just starting to see a lot of carbon capture and for people to wake up to the level of funding that's available to support that as well. So much more to come. As Udit said, I think we keep this conversation going for a long time, but those are some of the areas that maybe a year from now, I think we'll be talking about. And I do think that these vintages could be very special ones.
Anything to add, Udit, from your point of view?
I'll just say that, I think the themes are going to be very similar in Europe to what Mike just referred to for the US. I'm personally just really looking forward to seeing a combination of investors, financiers, regulators, and advisors, of course, crack in a serious way energy transition investing in at least some of the verticals that we all spend time with so far. And there are some significant challenges for infrastructure investors around these because they're, as we've previously mentioned, they're new business models and new types of risks that investors haven't historically signed up to take on. In the battery storage world, there's very little contracted offtake, a lot of merchant exposure. That's something that investors, I think, will find a way to deal with some of the newer battery storage platforms coming to market. I think there's some really interesting developments in carbon capture in the UK, for example, with the framework that the government's putting in place. And I'd like to think that that's going to be effective in stimulating some investment. Although there are some challenges there with respect to the total cost and capital outlay associated with building carbon capture facilities and networks. Hydrogen continues to be something that generates a lot of interest, particularly in local industrial applications and for closed-loop transportation power. We're starting to see, and I think we'll continue to see, lots of interest in biofuels, biogas, and then anything to do with the circular economy in terms of recycling, which I think more broadly has started to fit into infrastructure investing. And then lastly, I think there's some really exciting technologies on grid management. There was a recent article in the FT talking about how grids are a big blocker in the development and utilization of renewable technologies. And I think infrastructure investors have turned their attention to that, and I look forward to seeing how that develops.
Fascinating. Well, listen, Mike, Udit, firstly, thank you, as ever, for the help that you and your teams give us on compiling the GIA Global Asset Database. We really appreciate your help. And thanks for making time to join us on this podcast and for sharing your insights on the infrastructure market. We really appreciate you, sharing those with our listeners.
Thanks, John. At its core, the work that we do on this database is really just an amalgamation of the inputs that we're provided by all of the members. And we look at those and we organize them, and we compare them year over year and look at trends. So we couldn't do any of that without all the contributions that the members make. And I'd like to thank the members for giving us the data and reassure them that, of course, we treat it with the utmost respect. And thank you for having me on, and very much looking forward to continuing to work with the GIIA and its members to hopefully make all of these new investments and predictions a reality.
Likewise, John, thanks to you and to your listeners for being here. And it really has, as we talk about what the next year holds, just looking back over this year, the presence of GIIA in the U.S., and I think its contribution and partnership with both governments and industry as these different historical pieces of legislation advance towards implementation has been really a significant story, too. And I think the number of assets in the database shows, too, that the voice of GIIA is growing significant, where instead of being a representative sample, it's starting to actually truly comprise the market. And in some cases, these assets, they may change hands between members, but we've got this incredibly growing presence. And I think that's very, very powerful to be able to articulate as GIA introduces itself and its members and the importance of infrastructure investors all the more here in the U.S. to policymakers. So thanks for being able to be part of this conversation. And we look forward to talking next year on it.
Thanks, both. So that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening, and look out for our next episode coming soon on our website and on social media. Be sure to follow us on Spotify and iTunes. Thanks. See you next time.